Welcome to Betting 360, your number one source for horse racing and sports betting insights. Coming around the bend is your host, David Duffield, with another expert interview to give you the winning edge.
Hi, this is David Duffield, and welcome to another episode of the Betting 360 podcast. We've got Ben Cray on the show this week, and that's to talk about some listener questions. You guys sent through a whole heap of questions on what you'd like to ask of a professional punter before we chatted with Nick Pinkerton, and I've had a lot of good feedback on that episode and the content of that, so I'm going to do exactly the same with Ben today. Hey Ben, thanks for coming back on the show.
Hi Dave, happy new year to you and all the members of Champion Picks.
Yeah, to you too. Our last podcast episode was based around a listener question, so I wanted to repeat the dose for yourself. So what I'll just do is run through the questions that we received, which were, you know, what would you ask if you sat down for a quiet beer with a professional punter? So you right to run through those?
Well, there's no such thing as a quiet beer with me, but sure.
All right. So the first set of questions, you could broadly categorise them as getting started. So how did you gain the confidence when starting out? And I know you've got the bookmaking background, but how did you gain the confidence to basically go solo as a professional punter?
Well, Dave, I mean, to put it bluntly, I had been to some bookmakers. Yeah, I'd been in and around the traps, and I take a lot of knowledge from all the bookmakers and even the professional punters that punted with me. And I'd like to put all that into, you know, the memory bank, hopefully. And one day I decided to leave the bookmaking side of it, and had a little bit of a bankroll behind me and decided let's give it a go for real this time. I've always thought I was good enough to do it, but, you know, I didn't have the discipline to do it. But we gave it a go, and three and a half years later or whatever it is, we're still doing it. So something's going okay.
And in terms of getting started and then the ongoing stuff, I know you're pretty meticulous with your records. Did you already have that, you know, the mindset and also the, I'm not sure what the exact word is, but did you do that consistently, the record-keeping side of things, before you went professional or only once you got started?
No, I probably did it for about 6 months before, and that was another thing that influenced my decision to be able to go out by myself. I just decided, you know, we've got to make sure you can do it, and by keeping records, that's the main way to do it. Now, as you've outlined, I keep a record of every bet I've had, every track it's at, and I can tell you where I win and where I don't, and that's pretty much how we narrow down where we do bet.
So we had a question, probably not as relevant for you being a ratings-based punter, but it says, what is regarded as an acceptable strike rate for a serious punter to aim for, or is there another measure that should guide a punter?
Well, as you said, I don't really go on strike rates, and I don't think anyone really does, but, I mean, for a start, you've got to make a profit, that's obvious, but, you know, if you can make somewhere above bank interest, you know, if you can make 7 or 8% or 10%, you're flying in my books. You know, there wouldn't be 1% of punters that even win, let alone get close to winning. And so if you can make somewhere around that just under 10%, by the time you think of all the turnover you'll do in a year, that's you know, you can make six figures out of it. I'm not a millionaire and never will be, but we don't bet big enough to do that. But as long as we're getting by, and that's the way I look at it.
You might be a millionaire if there'd be a bookie to take your bets. That's
million baht, that's about it.
We had the question, what, in your opinion, is the biggest key to your long-term success?
It's discipline, 100%. You cannot chase, David. You must know that there's no last race. You know, the last race has just been run at Newcastle today, and we didn't win, but there's no use chasing it at Gosford Dogs or wherever they're on tonight. There'll be another race tomorrow. Discipline's the main thing, and discipline in staking as well. So it's discipline in everything, but making sure that you know, you don't let emotion come into it, and you don't when you're losing, you know that the winning's coming up, so don't go chasing it.
Yeah, I was about to ask that. So one of the questions here was, how do you have the discipline not to overbet? And I'm pretty sure that would mean in the good times and the bad.
Well, I start off, Dave, by, you know, I'm a little bit different here. I've got all my stuff on the computer at the moment, but even when I'm at home, I turn Sky Channel off when my race isn't on for a start. I don't want to be influenced by, you know, Joe Blow saying the late mail is this and this is firm 10 points, and all of a sudden I might think, oh, that's a good bet. If I'm not having a bet in the race, I turn it over to Channel V or whatever and watch some music or watch some sport. So for mine, I don't even want to be interested in it. I mean, you can take an interest in it, but unless you can sit there and watch the races and not have a bet on it, for mine, turn them off until your race comes on. That's my first bit of advice. Secondly is you've got to have a staking plan and you've got to stick to it. Even if you're winning and the next bet looks like the best bet in the world, you've got a price or you've got a certain stake, just stick to it. And the reason you are winning is because you are sticking to it. The day that you start to double your bets or triple your bets or something like this, you can wipe out a whole day's work in one race by doing that. So that's most important as well.
Okay, this is an interesting one. He says, my biggest pain is me. In your punting life, have you ever felt this way? It's an up and down business. Could you share some strategies on some ordinary periods?
Yeah, look, I mean, everyone goes through them and everyone thinks they're a jinx or they think if they back it, it's not going to win and these type of things. But, you know, you've got to realise that it's got nothing to do with you. It's all happening out there. It's nothing to do with what you're doing. So you've just got to do the right things and do them consistently. If you have a bad day, bad week or whatever, hopefully your staking plan will allow for those times. You know, here at Champion Picks, I had a real bad 3 weeks, I think, at one stage where we really lost quite badly, but we'd won that much beforehand that hopefully you had enough in the bank to cover it and we know that it's going to come good. And that's what it did. It came good at the end of the year. Now, we've had a bit of a slow start at the start of this year, but, you know, we know that tomorrow, next week or next month will be a winning month and we'll cover it. So you've just got to accept a loss when it happens. There's bad luck, yes. There's no such thing as you're due. These type of words are just stuff that mugs say. There's bad luck, yes, but, you know, you get good luck when you get the wins as well. So you've just got to make sure that you can't let it get you down. The last race of the day is finished. Turn off the TV, turn off the computer, go and spend some time with the family, go to the pub, whatever. But forget all about it and just remember that tomorrow there'll be another race.
So these ones are related, and it's an amalgamation, I suppose, of a few questions, but they're related to how to stay confident when 3 or 4 punts go wrong, how to handle a run of losses, how to cope with a losing run, how to deal with the psychological trauma of a long run of outs, how to handle losing odds on selections. So was there anything else that you wanted to add? Because this was a very common question.
Yeah, look, I think that keeping records is a really important part of this. And if we've kept every record, when we're having a bad trot, we can go back and see, hang on a minute, we won for, I think we had 24 days in a row or something where we won something ridiculous, you know, Dave. So you can go back and say, hang on a minute, there was a winning patch here, there was a losing patch there. You know, it'll turn around in the long run. We know it's going to come back again. So you've just got to be positive. You cannot let it get to you. There will be losing times. Every person in the world will have losing times. It's just ridiculous to think that you won't. And everyone will have a bad month, maybe even a bad year. But you've just got to be confident in what we're doing and in confident in your results. And just remember that the good times, but just remember when you get the good times again, so not overbet them and just keep plugging away at what we do, and that will cover the bad times.
We had the question about how do you manage time, family, work, and punting?
Well, punting's first, isn't it, out of all those? Look, it's a good question. I'm in a different, my wife works 9 to 5, and I'm in a different position probably from most people since I'm 4 hours behind you guys. So I get up and do some work early and pretty much work the whole day while she's at work. And when she gets home, I try and make sure I do some stuff with her. I think it's important to not all be about punting, you know. Whether it's just going and have a game of golf or whatever, or going down to the pub or doing something with your wife, or even turning a footy match on and don't have a bet in it. Just sit there and actually just watch a match for the enjoyment. These are the things you need to do to switch off. Don't stress that you lost. Don't go over celebrating because you won, because remember that's money that you might need tomorrow. So all these things, you know, you've got to be able to switch off. And when the last race has been run for the day, yeah, go and do something completely different.
Well, of all the guys I speak to, and I come across a few these days, I think you've got one of the better work-life balances amongst them all, because you certainly put in the hours, but there's also plenty of time, I think, from what I've heard and seen, socialising, golfing, whatever, just something away from the desk. A lot of people get chained to the desk.
Well, Dave, I sort of get up at 5 o'clock in the morning here, And yeah, it's an early start, but I can get 3 hours done before my wife goes to work. I'll go and have some breakfast with her, have a coffee, and then I sit down for the next 8 hours or whatever it is till 4 o'clock, till she gets home, and I do work. And I do this 3 days a week during the week. Twice a week I go and play golf, so I just get some work done before I go, and then I get a game of golf in twice a week, and Saturdays and Sundays usually put a couple of hours in. It all adds up to 50 hours a week, which is, you know, a good week, but I sort of space it out too, and that's the benefit of working from home and for yourself. I can do it when I like. I do have deadlines to meet, obviously, but, you know, if I want to get up at 5 in the morning and get a good 3 hours work done before anyone's around, it's a good thing to do. But as I said, you know, I break up my week with a couple of games of golf, and, you know, Friday night I'll go down to the pub with the boys and have a game of pool and just forget all about even whether I won or lost. You know, I just want to get that right out of my head and have some relaxed time, because it can't be all about this.
Well, this question isn't from a listener, it's from me, but how do you get up at 5 a.m. when you're going to bed at 3:30?
Very funny.
you can pass on that one, that's fine. Okay, form analysis was the next category.
You don't have to, this is not a video chat, is it? You'd have to see what I'm like.
What do you consider is most important when assessing the form in a race, and just bearing in mind that, you know, we're talking harness racing?
Yep. For me, the number one key in harness racing or trots is speed maps. And I think it's actually, you know, I'm an ex-Greyhound bookmaker. I've done my time working for other bookies doing races and whatever, and speed maps are important in any code you're in. It's got to be good to be out the front for mine. You know, yes, they might go too fast in front and it's not as good, but for mine, you know, 70% or 80% of races are won by the horses in the top three or four for trots. So speed maps are really important. Second thing is I really like class. And I think, again, it's a major importance in all codes. Pretty obvious that if a horse has won three or four races before and it's running against a bunch of maidens or ones that have won one race, it's going to have more ability than the others, so it's going to be somewhere in the market unless it's horribly out of form. So horses are running in or out of their class. And again, with class, horses dropping down in class or going up in class, that's a major part of what I like to look at. And the third major part of what I really like to look at is the price a runner was last time it ran in a similar type race. Let's just say we've got a very easy maiden, just for argument's sake, and something was 6-4 last start, but it only ran fifth. There wasn't really any excuses to it or anything like that, but it just ran fifth, but it was well favoured at 6-4. Next week it comes out in a very similar race, similar type horses, Nothing that different. It might have a better barrier or worse, whatever, but it might be 5 or 6-1 next week. For mine, I want to be all over that horse. If it was 6-4 last week, I live by the where there's smoke, there's fire sort of philosophy, so there must have been a reason it was short. And if they want to send it out at 5 or 6-1 next week, well, I'm all over it. I don't care if it ran 5th, 8th, 10th, 2nd, whatever. So that I will sort of take great... I'll have a real look, hard look into what price it was last start and whether or not it should have been that price. But, you know, I'll take a great deal of my form comes into how well favoured it was last time and whether it was back or not too. There's a difference between something starting at 2-1 on and drifting 2-6-4, or something starting at 3-opening at 3-1 and firming to 6-4 as well. So I like to take that into account as well.
Do you have a list of trainers, drivers that are questionable? So maybe not dishonest, but probably more importantly named unreliable. And how would you apply that to the form? So yeah, not to look to slander anyone, but how do you deal with, the Red Hot's reputation?
Well, they don't help by calling it the Trots and then it rhymes with Red Hot's, do they? But, mate, that one's up in the head, that one. That list is in the head. It's not anywhere.
But there is a list?
Oh, there's a list, definitely. There's a list. And there's a list for that. There's a list also for... there's a list for trainers and drivers that go better, let's say, at different tracks. There's a list of trainers and drivers that I want to be on more than others. There's a list of drivers that, you know, when you get a driving change from a bad driver to what I consider to be a good driver, there's a list for those as well. And that will all be applied somewhere in the rating the horse process. But there is a list, yes.
Okay, Ben, we'll leave it there for today and then we'll resume next week with part two.
Thanks for tuning in to Betting 360. Get more in-depth analysis, tips, and that betting edge by heading over to championpicks.com.au, where you'll find a full transcript of this episode. If you like the show, share us with a fellow punter or drop by iTunes to leave us your thoughts. Betting 360, punting from all angles.